Welcome to another episode of the Pastor's Call podcast. I'm your host, Joel Webb. Before we begin today's episode, I want to thank the sponsor for the show. It's Blue Water Free Methodist Church, where I have the pleasure of serving. We're an intentional community reflecting Jesus to our world. Also want to thank Refresh Digital Services. They are the ones who produce and publish this podcast. Well, today I am so excited to be joined by Jill Richardson. She is the pastor at Real Hope Community Church in Oswego, Illinois. Oswego, Illinois, not New York, where I'm familiar with, but Oswego, Illinois. So thank you so much for joining us today, Jill.
Thank you for having me. It's great.
Well, let's just go right into it. I'd love for you to share a little bit about who you are, your background, and what you felt your call into the pastoral ministry was.
Okay. That's a little meandering, not surprisingly. I didn't find what I refer to as the end of my spiritual journey in Jesus till my senior year of high school, but really it's probably, as we all know, the beginning of my spiritual journey in more of a true sense. But I'd been searching for a few years at that point, and so it kind of felt like an ending time, that big sigh of, okay, here's home. Through a friend in high school I had met. I finished high school, planned to go to law school because that is what all good championship debaters do. So that was the goal. And but I took a constitution and education class in the middle of that. And I just loved talking to my classmates who are all teachers and hearing their stories. And I realized, you know, as a major in English and my best role models were English teachers, that I went, maybe I want to do something more hands-on, more immediately beneficial to people. So I went the route of becoming a high school English teacher. I knew, though, from that point where I made that mental switch from, okay, we're not going to law school anymore, that's not where God is leading me, I knew God was also leading me into ministry. I didn't know what that looked like at the time. And I knew I had a call. I knew there'd be ministry, and I think I recognized it as a pastoral call, but I had no framework for knowing that's what it was when I saw it. I couldn't recognize that because I didn't grow up in the church. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't have a concept of a call to ministry. And when I mentioned to my home church that I thought I might be called to the pastorate, I learned very quickly that there are some churches where that's not okay if you're a woman. So I didn't have a framework for it there either, nor in the church that I was attending at college. It was very much, you know, not led by women. In fact, there was one young man there who told me and a friend of mine one evening in a dinner line that it would have been better for us not to be born than to become female pastors. So you get an idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of where I was and why I couldn't recognize a pastoral call when I saw it. So it kind of sat on the back burner for a while. It sat on a back burner while, you know, my husband finished medical school and we moved to St. Paul for his residency. And then it was like, okay, it's my turn. There's a seminary here. I'm going. So that's what I did. Found a great FMC church there, and we ended up in that spot. So I think from my story, like, you didn't ask this question, but I'm going to answer it anyway. if someone was, you know, saying, I don't know if I'm called, you know, what does a call look like? I would have to say it's okay if you don't get a lightning bolt. You know, if yours is a very slow discovery of journey, it's no less of a call.
Yep.
Because that's very much what mine was. It was just the next right step. So.
And that's actually interesting you bring that up, because it's a concept that's come up quite a number of times on the show here. Of course, we're familiar with kind of the Martin Luther lightning bolt on the road in the middle of the storm. We've also seen pastors who have a growing conviction over their life, like yourself. Maybe don't know at the start of what it is, but feel that leading towards that. And then, of course, there's situational, oh, we need a pastor, you're it. And that's how God maybe chooses to speak in that situation. And so I found it interesting you talked about you didn't really have a framework from your background. what led you towards that conclusion and feeling, oh yeah, this is God calling me towards pastoral ministry. And maybe what were some of those steps to realizing that? Maybe for those people who are out there, because our hope, our goal is to reach those who are pursuing or interested in the pastoral call. And maybe this will be for someone out there listening right now.
That's a really good question. For me, I am the sort of personality that just kind of barrels ahead and mm-hmm. tends to say, well, if God doesn't want me to go there, God's going to stop me. Until God does, I'm going. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I pursued it. We joined a church. My husband did medical school in Seattle. And so we shopped around for a church for a little while. And then a guy I worked with said, oh, you should try my wife's church because she's religious like you. And we were like, okay. And so that is how we actually ended up at a Free Methodist church. Mm. And we felt the Spirit there and decided to put down roots there. And I loved what it stood for. I loved the history. And so when I found out that there was a track that you could get on, you know, you could start as a local ministerial candidate and you can put your toes in the water and say, okay, is this for me? Is this where God is leading? And again, you can start in that one step and then you can find out fairly quickly, maybe now this isn't for me.
Yeah.
You have steps. I love the fact that you have steps you can take mm-hmm.
yeah.
to go on to the next thing. And for me, it was taking a couple classes in Bible while I was out there and seeing what I could learn. Mm-hmm. Getting a few credits so that if I did go to seminary, I would have some credits. You know, it's take those chances where they are.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll lead you to the next step. Mm-hmm. I can't say I had a planned out thing.
Yeah.
It was more of, okay, where am I? What opportunities can I grab where I'm at? Because my journey was circumscribed very much by my husband, mm-hmm. you know. He got into medical school here. He got a residency here. And so that's yeah. where we were.
Yeah.
And if I wanted to go to school, I did it there.
Yeah, for sure. So what, so then you talked about how you went to seminary and, you know, it's a topic that we haven't focused on too recently in the history of this show, but from the things you learned at seminary, what would you say is one thing that was like spot on exactly what you'd experience in ministry and then maybe the opposite of that? Because I'm sure that there are those as well.
Okay, now you're asking me to remember like 30 years ago. Yeah.
or something unexpected that, you know, that from that experience.
You know, I treasured the youth ministry classes, I guess, mm-hmm. really helped me. Mm-hmm. Having been a high school teacher, mm-hmm. you know, there was mm-hmm. nothing there that surprised me.
Yeah.
But it was really, really helpful for me to understand that as a pastor, even though I never went into youth ministry, my goodness, my church has been, you know, predominantly teenagers at a lot of the times right now. And to be able to realize that they're actually my primary, most important people right now
mm-hmm.
was something instilled in me way back then. And it was true then, it's true now.
Mm.
If they are not the people, if they're not going out of my church having a solid foundation, then I don't, what I did with the adults doesn't even matter.
Mm.
So I think that's key from my seminary experience. Something not spot on. Oh my goodness. I mean, I think this is something I was actually, maybe was going to talk about later. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But it was very old school in the sense that they taught pastors that you're over here and the congregation is over here mm-hmm. and don't be friends mm-hmm. and don't be too vulnerable and don't, you know, because you're just going to get hurt.
Hmm.
I'm like, at the time I was like, that that doesn't work for me. That just doesn't ring true. But I know we were all taught that. And now at this point, it's like after, you know, 30 years of ministry, yeah, you're going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely going to get hurt, but you're going to get hurt anyway. So you might as well really get in there and really love those people and really be part of them. So I am not separate. I am not set apart. Mm-hmm. And so if I could go back and raise my hand and say, hold on, wait a minute, that would probably be the point.
And that reminds me of that C.S. Lewis quote. He talks something along the lines of, you know, in order to truly have the opportunity to love, you have to have the opportunity to be hurt. I'm butchering it, but there's something along those lines I know he had said. So, you know, appreciate you touching on that. So would you be able to give us kind of a 30,000 foot view then of what from that point from seminary has brought you to Real Hope Community in Oswego, Illinois, maybe a couple of the high points and low points along the way leading up to that?
Yeah. Again, like I said, that was, you know, some 30 years ago. So there's been a lot of road gone past. I was really incredibly fortunate to have my first two churches be very supportive, really, really good mentors as pastors. And so they kind of paved the way for what I expected. I went into this with real high expectations of what a pastoral mentor and a senior pastor would be like. They were great at encouraging. They believed in me. They let me run with ideas. They got out of the way and said, go for it, exercise your gifts. They were not threatened by me, which has not been my experience since then. You know, they encouraged me to grow and learn and stretch. And I didn't know that was rare because it was like two pastors in a row. So I'm like, okay, this is normal. And no, it's not. There was some rude awakening after that, but I, you know, I'm just so grateful. That was how I started, you know, to be a woman in ministry, as rough as it is, but to start well with two great leaders is so rare and so fortunate. And I'm just super grateful. So with the encouragement of that last one, you know, I finished seminary with two tiny little girls under five and a husband who was never home because residency, and took off from there. The in-between years, like I said, were a lot harder. I did get sidelined a lot more because I was the mom. I had by that time three little girls. And, you know, if being a pastor wasn't in my paradigm when I was younger, being a mom in ministry wasn't really in the paradigm of the leadership that I was working under, at least of small children. And I didn't know how to bridge that. That's not something they taught me in seminary, speaking of things I didn't learn. They didn't teach us anything about being a woman in ministry. That wasn't a concept. So I didn't know how to change that or challenge it. And I didn't know if it was worth the effort because I already had so much else to do. You know, I was raising kids. I found success in writing. If I wasn't going to get it in the church, I started writing and did well in that. I was an associate pastor. I've been an associate pastor for a long time. Led worship, did social justice work. So that's kind of where I sat for a good long time. To get to Real Hope Community Church now, you got to fast forward a bit to about 8 years ago. And again, I'm an associate of the church, and I started feeling this nudging from God. And you know, when God nudges you, and I started feeling this nudging of it's time to step up. It's time to be a senior pastor. And I said, no, I'm good. I don't want to be a senior pastor, God. I'm good. And also, I'm in like the best church I've ever been in my life. I don't want to leave it. I'm so happy here. And so, no, really, I'm going to turn down that offer. And you can't really do that, as we all know. So eventually, I got worn down to the point with God where I said, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. I will become a senior pastor. I will obey. I will do it under one condition, that I don't have to leave this church that I love. And I thought, I feel pretty confident in that, but I don't have to worry about this. Mm-hmm. This isn't going to happen. And about a month after that, the senior pastor said he was leaving. So here I am going, that was a cheap shot, God. That was not fair. So I applied to that job, and that's a story for the highs and lows. But here I am, and we're kind of leaning into some new ways of doing church that we're super excited about, coming out of the COVID doldrums a little bit finally. You would never recognize our church, you know, from 15 years ago when it started as kind of a wannabe mega church. You wouldn't know it now. Very different. We are not your average normal church, and I love it.
And so how long have you been at Real Hope?
Well, I've been here the whole 15 years.
Okay. So yeah, 15. Okay.
But I've been the senior pastor, I guess 8.
Okay.
It does not seem that long. Man, it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, if you're willing to, I'd love for you to share a little bit about some of the things that you're doing differently, because I know that's something that, you know, different pastors maybe are wondering or feeling or thinking, like, you know, COVID shook things up. It made us rethink maybe on how we can maybe do things differently. And so what were some of your takeaways that you've been implementing and some of the results that have come from that?
Yeah. So when I did my doctoral work at Gordon-Conwell, I focused on, it was leading the church in a changing context. Graduated in 2020. Yeah.
Ready to apply your thesis.
Ready to apply. And I started focusing on something I'd been doing a little bit at the church, kind of dipping toes in the idea of interactive preaching. And so I did my thesis work in that too, to see, okay, who's doing this, which is virtually no one, but a few people. And what are the benefits? So what is it, a better way of doing things?
Could you kind of define interactive preaching maybe for
some? Yeah. On a given Sunday, typically I'll go up and I'll give some background, some cultural, historical, scriptural background. I will throw it open to questions. I'll ask them questions, and we'll dialogue back and forth. Sometimes we'll get more hands-on. I might set a science experiment for them or some other kind of experiment, and they've got to get in there and do that and come back to me with conclusions. And then we'll say, okay, how does that relate to this, you know, this scripture today? And what are we talking about? So it's very hands-on, and it's very much not me giving a monologue.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I love preaching, but doctoral thesis work is not that effective. So, you know, and that comes from the education world. The teachers know that. That if you want to get a point across, if you want to really disciple people, they've got to buy in. They've got to be able to ask their questions. So that's what we do. And we're hoping once we get our building renovated and we move in, the goal is going to be to kind of gather around table and have a meal there instead of a real sterile kind of communion service. Have a meal and have a discussion and have, you know, the kids are already right in there discussing with us, but that's our goal. That's where we're going.
And so what has the result of that looked like? Like, you know, you're laying an exegetical framework of kind of the basis and background of the passage. And then, you know, as a pastor, I know, puts it, you know, once you start asking questions, you know, you open up the door for questions, it can get dangerous, but it can also be an amazing thing. So what has some of that like looked like? And the results of that been for you?
It's scary, yes, because, you know, you're talking to a person who likes to plan and who does not like to be surprised. You're talking to a person who does not like to be put on the spot. Like, I want to know what's coming next. And I want to know, I want to have planned my answers. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that. Mm. And sometimes, you know, people will come, will raise a question that really sends us in a different direction. Mm. And I hadn't planned on going that way. But suddenly you realize as a pastor, you're in a moment of pastoral care. Mm. And wow, we've got to address this, mm-hmm. not what I came here planning to do. Mm-hmm. And there's just something beautiful about that, mm-hmm. about being able to do that. And letting the community around you, and we have a very small church, so it's easier. You know, the community around you see that you will stop and take time for that. Mm. And by extension, you will stop and take time for them. Mm. And also that they can speak into that, because, like, for instance, I had a Sunday where someone expressed anxiety, and they were talking real clinical anxiety. And I knew that as soon as she opened her mouth and said some things. And I'm like, I don't have the skills for that. Mm-hmm. But there are other people in this congregation who also deal with anxiety, and they were able to speak up and say, well, have you tried this? Have you considered? And I couldn't do that because mm-hmm. I don't have that experience. I don't know. Mm. So it was a real great moment that other people could use their skills and their experience and their gifts. So I love that the whole church can be heard mm-hmm. and can, you know, do the 1 Corinthians 14 thing. If you have something to say that matters, say it.
Yeah. And it does sound that that fits into the framework, kind of the meal together, the fellowship together, and then the discussion that, again, you know, maybe that there are times of monologue, but it's a lot of times of working through and talking through, seeing how, you know, Christ is apparent and working in our lives through Scripture. And so I love the sound of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm certainly intrigued by that. So, you know, thank you for bringing that to my attention and, you know, maybe spearheading it. Maybe there's someone, Lord willing, who's listening that has a spark, who's inspired by that, and would certainly love to find out more. So one of the things we always like to look at is, you know, from our wealth of experience, you know, the fancy word is heuristics. We learn how to look to the future. From Jill Richardson's perspective right now in beginning of 2024, kind of looking forward, what do you see as potential coming challenges that pastors coming in as kind of fresh green pastors are going to be looking at facing?
Oh boy. Yeah, you're already facing it. I think a couple things come to mind. One is I've been saying this for a very long time, and a lot of us know it. Pastoring is really going to be bivocational, mm-hmm. and you should expect that. You know, there's no way around it. We aren't going to come out of seminary to a big job that will support us. It's just not going to happen mm-hmm. for the vast majority of people. So if I can tell, you know, someone who's preparing for ministry one thing, it is get yourself another marketable skill while you're in college. Prepare yourself to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And so that you're not floundering and you're not, you know, in financial difficulties. And that's, mm-hmm. I'm going to say, I don't think that's a bad thing. It's hard to be bivocational, but it opens us up to a lot of good things. It opens us up, to the congregation, for one thing, to stepping up and being the church. Cause mm-hmm. you know, the corollary to get yourself a marketable skill is don't try to do both completely. Because you can't. The church has to step up. They have to, or, you know, you absolutely cannot do it all.
Yeah.
Or you're going to sacrifice your family or your mental health. And, you know, don't do that.
Yeah.
Please don't do that. So that's, you know, one big challenge.
Yeah. I certainly appreciate that. Growing up as a pastor's kid, where suddenly my dad was bivocational, and seeing and experiencing that. And I'm also bivocational now at this point too. And, certainly, you know, understanding the balancing act, and can appreciate the realities of that as well. So thank you for highlighting that. Hopefully it'll be an encouragement, for those who hear that. There's a Charles Spurgeon quote I love. He talks about living in the Bible, but reading many good books. And of course, we've been changed and transformed by the power of the Holy Spirit through God's word. But what have been one or some of those other good books, personally or professionally, that you've really appreciated over the years?
Well, the one I always recommend that I read in my doctoral work, I recommend all pastors, speaking of challenges for the future, is Canoeing the Mountains, Todd Bolsinger. You know, I recommend that to everybody because it fits in with what I just said. How do we enter uncharted territory? We've never been here before. And it's so good at helping you figure that out. And my favorite books of, you know, recently, I guess my favorite book of 2023 was The Evangelical Imagination, Karen Swallow Pryor. That was, you know, the lit nerd in me, as well as that she does such a great job of tracing out, you know, what has happened to our intellectual skills as Christians. And it's frightening and it's good. And of course, the year, I mean, my favorite book the year before that, again, every single pastor I'm going to tell you needs to read was A Church Called Tove. So if I could say, you know, these are what you should read, that's what I would suggest.
Yeah, I've read both Canoeing the Mountains and A Church Called Tove. I've done a lot of reading and research kind of into, you know, spiritual abuse and toxic faith and toxic church. And A Church Called Tove, I found, was probably one of the best books, not just for its diagnosis, but also its response to it as well. So how do you actually not just react and understand toxic cultures, but then how do you actually respond and build cultures of goodness that reflect that reflect Christ? To the church, people in the church, and the broken world around us. So I really do appreciate those recommendations. And those will all be available in the show notes so people can take and benefit from those as well. So Jill, wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to join us and just sharing your heart and sharing your story of your call to and journey through ministry.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And I want to thank the sponsor for the show. It's Blue Water Free Methodist Church. We're an intentional community reflecting Jesus to our world. I also want to thank Refresh Digital Services, who produces and publishes this podcast. Most importantly, I want to thank you, the listener, for joining us on another episode of the Pastor's Call podcast, where our hope, our goal, and our vision is to encourage those interested, pursuing, or in the pastoral ministry by hearing the stories of those who've gone before. You can find the show wherever podcasts are found. You can also find us on Facebook and on YouTube. So between now and the next episode, listen and share. Share with your family and friends. Share it with your pastor. And we'll see you next time. God bless.